Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and oh, we are going to do some traveling and, well, some mentally visual sipping of the liqueur of the gods, as many people have described it, and that is delicious wines. But we're going to be talking with Robert V. Camuto. We are visiting with him in France, and his fascinating book is called Corkscrewed, Adventures in the New French Wine Country. Welcome, Robert, to the show.
Thank you for having me, Donna. Thank you.
This is such a joy. Your book was so interesting, and I want my audience to know a little bit about your background. You've been a journalist for nearly 30 years. You contribute regularly to a couple of publications, The Wine Spectator and The Washington Post. You've done writing for many other groups. You live in France. And I just think my audience needs to know how you developed this wonderful love affair with what many people describe the drink of the gods. How did that become?
Well, let me explain that, Donna. About 9 years ago, in the year 2000, I was a newspaper publisher in Fort Worth, Texas. I'd started an alternative weekly newspaper there. And about 9 years ago, I sold the paper, and my wife is from France. She was born in Nice. And we were looking at where we were going to make our next move. Our family is from the East Coast, but we always love coming to Europe and traveling here throughout France and Italy, etc. And one night over the dinner table, I just said to my wife, "Well, why don't we move to France? It was always a dream of ours, and I'd always had an interest in wine, and that I think dates back to my childhood. I remember my Italian grandfather in New York City sitting at my grandmother's table with a bottle of Chianti, and I would be the one who would uncork that bottle, and I remember the smells of my grandmother's cooking in the kitchen, etc. And wine, I think, was always a part of my life, but when I came to France, it really began an adventure. And as I traveled from one end of France to the other, I really soaked up all the different varieties of wine and seeing how they went with different kinds of cuisine. It was so, so fascinating, and it's almost hard to imagine from the perspective of American, where we often maybe we have white wine, we have red wine, and we don't have as diverse a wine culture as you find in some places in Europe. For example, in the cold of Alsace near Germany, they make white wines, white sweet wines that go with their cuisine. In the south, they have more full-bodied, spicy reds. In Burgundy, you have Pinot Noir. In the Loire Valley, you have many different varieties of white sweet wines, different red wines, et cetera, et cetera. And as I traveled across France, one thing that I learned was that perhaps 20 years or so ago, when you thought about quality wines, particularly in France, there was only really Bordeaux and Burgundy. Well, what's happened now is there's really been an explosion of quality of a new generation of winemakers that are doing their darndest to put out the best wines they can in all these different regions. And in some of these regions, it had been a lost art, one might say,
mm-hmm.
that the grandparents had made wine, and there was an intermediary generation, perhaps after the war, where the focus was very much on producing quantity, 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 and not necessarily quality. And now we have a new generation that is really focusing on quality and working on bringing out the wine that is really typical of their different areas, and it goes with their cuisine and what we call terroir. And in my book, I think that what really gets me passionate about wine are these people, these winemakers, who are working with the land, working with their grapes to bring about a product that is really a reflection of their, what we call terroir, and their environment. And to me, that's just very, very fascinating. I think that winemaking is a field that really combines, it's a rare field that combines so many different things when you talk about agriculture and philosophy, taste, etc. And the book is really a, is written from the heart, written as a chronicle of all these fascinating people that I've encountered.
I'd like to share some points of information that you bring out in your book right in the very beginning that I just thought were wonderful. I had to chuckle on your very first page how you said that the French government health campaigns were targeting their countrymen's overconsumption, and it just made me chuckle because as far back as I can remember, it was always understood in France and Italy that wine is a food. And that's something that you bring out, that you discovered in your book. But also
yeah.
that the French are still the world's largest producers of fine wines. And I'm in the Pacific Northwest, and of course we have come up very much into the winery environment, and we have produced some phenomenal wines out of Washington. But the French still are that, but you bring up something that I discovered from a previous interview that I did with someone with Fetzer Wineries, and over in
yes.
France, the winemakers, you say, are rejecting herbicides, pesticides, chemical fertilizers, and winery tricks, I'm quoting right from your book, to produce wine
yes.
from grape varieties that were obsolete a generation ago. That, to
yes.
me, is amazing.
Yes. Yes. Well, there's a number of points. There's a number of points in there, and what I like to, I often talk about what I think are the four qualities of a great wine.
Mm-hmm.
And the first quality is terroir. And what is terroir? Terroir is a French term that refers to the sun, the exposure, the soils, the geology, the microclimate, etc., in a particular locale. And what is particularly interesting about France in that respect is that I think that no other place on earth really has the diversity of wine terroirs. That's not to say that other places have just as dramatic nature and excellent places for growing wine, the Northwest being a good example of that. But I think the difference is that in a place like France, you have thousands of years of history where from Roman times, people have been experimenting, and this kind of experimentation takes decades and centuries, and to the point where over these centuries, people were able to determine what hillside gave what effect with what grapes, et cetera, et cetera. And the second quality that I like to talk about that's very important is the respect for the environment. And I think that that is absolutely essential. In France now, for example, we see weeds cropping up, especially in winter, people letting things get green, realizing that, you know, a few weeds isn't going to kill, to kill the grapevines and destroy the wine. And that is very important because I believe that if you have dead soil, you're going to create dead products. And wine is a living thing, and I think it's very important that you have the respect for the environment. The third quality that I talk about is that wine should be made from grapes. And there are so many additives, Donna, that get thrown into wine by big industrial producers. They add acid, tannins, chemical yeast, and all manner of things to correct wine to make it taste good. But those are, to me, it's a way of cheating wine because really if someone knows what they're doing, they really don't need very much to make a great wine. Mm-hmm. And the fourth quality I think is important is the people. And wine should be about humanity. For me, it's the way that man touches nature in a very profound way. And also when I talk about people, wine should be something that is shared with our friends, with our family, with the people that we love. And it shouldn't be treated, as it sometimes is, as some kind of snob accessory or...
holy relic.
yes, exactly, exactly. So it's meant to be enjoyed, and I think that's a very important point.
I have to chuckle when you say wine snobbery. We have a friend that we call him our personal wine snob because he has he really has a love of wine, but he has all of this knowledge, and we just chuckle and laugh at him every time we get together, and we say the only thing that's important to us is that it tastes good because I've had some bad wine, but you bring out some excellent points, and you have talked about in your book, Corkscrewed, a number of different individuals who have chosen to develop their own winery. You also make a comment about how irrigation is a very critical situation, and in many areas where these wineries are located, and these aren't gigantic wineries. These are personally tended by the people, and you talk, and please correct me if I say it wrong, François Feitou Garamond, gentleman, he has a winery, and you have a beautiful photo of him right on site with his winery. What's the community that that's in, and tell us his story about how he got involved with it, because he's quite a character.
Now, are you talking about François de Lignery?
All right, maybe that's who I'm talking about. I had, its previous, the owner, was Mr. Garamond. Am I right? Am I doing that incorrectly?
Are you talking about in Saint-Emilion?
Yes, yes.
Well, let me tell you the story about François de Lignery in Saint-Emilion, and that is a very interesting story. In fact, François was, his family had a very famous chateau in Saint-Emilion called Soutard, S-O-U-T-A-R-D, and he ran that for many, many years with his family, and just about a couple of years ago, a very typical thing happened, and that is that the family, his sisters in particular, decided that they wanted to sell out their shares. And there was really nothing that he could do. It was sold out from underneath him. And Francois, is a meticulous winemaker. And at a time when one of the things that was happening in Saint-Emilion is many of the other producers that are very well known, I think were following a trend of maybe making the wines very, very woody and adding things so that they could win tasting competitions and et cetera, mm-hmm. and make them stand out in a lineup. But I think Francois is a winemaker with a lot of integrity. He did not do that. The wines he made at Soutar are very elegant, subtle, and delicious. Well, what happened a couple of years ago is the Chateau sold out to a large insurance company. And this is actually something that's very, very typical in among these big chateaux in Bordeaux. They're now owned by insurance companies, multinational companies, et cetera. And Francois has now installed himself in another area, buying up vineyards and recreating something from scratch. It's out of the Bordeaux area. It's in an area called the Corbière in the southwest, and it's a beautiful wild area, and he is cultivating the kind of wine that he wants to. It's going to take a lot of time, but is doing it in a really pure, beautiful area in pure nature. And one of the things that I wanted to point out is when you talked about people being personally in the vines, to me that is so important. There are so many different theories or, let's say, practices going around about when we talk about agriculture that respects nature. There's, of course, organic agriculture. There's biodynamic agriculture, which is getting more and more popular now,
mm-hmm.
and biodynamics, where people do everything pretty much to the phases of the moon and the planet, etc. And then there's something called, sustainable agriculture, which is, there are chemicals used, but in a very sparing basis. But to me, I don't necessarily subscribe to one label over another. I just think that the most important thing is that people use the absolute minimum or no chemicals, but that they are out there in their vineyards and know what's going on. To me, that's the most important thing.
Now, you had an interesting experience where you volunteered to be a grape picker, because the grapes for the wines are picked by hand. And I just had to laugh when I was reading this, because you did such a fabulous description of the pain and suffering, and you did it all for 20 minutes. This is really a skill, and most of us wouldn't even give that a thought. We think that it's maybe automated, but that's not the case when you are picking grapes for wine. You have to be very careful. Tell us why.
Well, for one thing, you can cut off your finger. No, no, and Donna, I did it for a week.
Oh, for a week, not for 20 minutes. Okay.
No. 20 minutes was about, I pretty much had it after the first 20 minutes. My back was killing me. It's very much stoop labor. But, you know, again, that's something that's very important, and that's part of the humanity of winemaking, is people coming together for that harvest. It's been done for centuries and centuries. And it was really one of the most rewarding, eye-opening experiences that I've had. And it is true that more and more places now, I think not so much in the quality winemaking area, but in the volume winemaking area, do use harvesting machines. But the problem is that machines can't look at a bunch of grapes and decide if there's a bad part that needs to be removed, etc. I mean, only human hands can do that. And I did this week in Alsace, and which is a very interesting area of France, in the fact that the people speak a dialect there, for one thing, which is a German-based dialect. And so here were all these people speaking this funny dialect, and I felt completely lost. And here I was, this was in the village of Volksheim. I was the first, certainly the first American who'd ever gone there to pick grapes. And I think some of the local Volksheimers were absolutely confused about what I was doing there. And I was twice accused of or suspected of being perhaps a spy. But really, after a couple of days working with these people, it was just magnificent. They took me in and made me feel like part of the group, and it was just a wonderful experience. And we breathed in that fall air with that fog in the mornings, and at 10 o'clock we would take our first break with where the tractor would roll out, and right on the hood we would pour out the wine and have our morning sausage and baguette, and it was just great.
You had another experience when you're there, and again, in your book, Corkscrew, you share so many different elements. You have the different wine specialists that you interact with that have their own wineries, but the story about the frogs and how you, your wife, and daughter went with a group of French scientists and naturalists that were part of an Operation Frog Proliferation. And
yeah.
This is something I can remember as a little girl. Frog's legs were considered to be a real delicacy. And in France, they are now protecting the frogs because they were really in danger of being exterminated from people using them as a food source. Am I correct?
Yes. Well, what happened a number of years ago, frogs are endangered for a couple of reasons. But it's now, of course, for many years, illegal to hunt frogs for food. You hardly ever see it on any menus. And when you do, those are frog legs that are imported from Indonesia or the East. And the main reason why they had instituted this ban on frog hunting was that the mosquito population had gone up so much.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like what happened in Austin, Texas. In Austin, Texas, they had literally killed off all the bats. And there was a
scientist. Right, I'm very familiar with the bats under Congress Avenue Bridge, yes.
Right, absolutely. And so they bring the bats back, and malaria stopped being in the area. And so now you have millions of them flying there, and everybody's happy because tons of insects are consumed by the bats. So in France, it's been the frogs, and they have brought this back. It's interesting to see the different parts of the world affected in different ways by different things. And your book shows how in the making of wine, there are processes that are done also. And I'll quote directly from your book, "No wine ever tastes the same. It changes week to week, day to day, glass to glass, because it is a living thing." What was it that enabled you to develop your palate for wine? Because there are many wines that people will taste them and they say, "This is terrible. We don't want it." So they basically don't want to try different wines. What would you recommend to someone like that?
Well, what I would recommend really is, first of all, wine should be enjoyed. I mean, you shouldn't I think that when you talk about developing a palate, what that's really about is just trying different things. I think what often happens is maybe sometimes people don't want to bother. They say, well, I like Chardonnay, and I'm going to stick with Chardonnay, and that's what I'm going to drink. Or I like Merlot, and I'm going to stick with that. But I think that when you really explore fine wines from some of these different grapes and different regions, and you pair them with different foods, it really opens up a whole new world. And I think people just need to be open to new experiences and to try them with different foods. For example, I think if you look at some of these lighter wines, like your Burgundies, even some of the cru wines in Beaujolais or the Loire Valley, and I'm talking about red wines, that tend to be lighter. And when you pair those with, say, for example, a dish like grilled sausage or meats that tend to be fatty, it just goes so well together because those lighter, slightly more acidic wines really cut through the fat and really complement that very well.
You have a couple in here who have been married for 40 years, and I loved your stories. Jacques and his lovely wife, Jean, and you describe them,
yes.
And I want to take it because your description of them is just adorable. You say they have a similar look and shape, a phenomena that you attributed to their 40 years of marriage. They both stand about 5'4", with rounded bodies balanced atop small feet. Their soft, pale faces were bespectacled with the same style of large and dated gold-rimmed glasses. Then, you know, I mean, it's just wonderful the way you use words. And then you talk about how, at one point after you'd gotten to know them, you wanted to impress them with what you had learned about wine, and then you just take a bottle and you rip the cork out. And he's watching you doing what you're doing, and he puts his hands to the top of his head. He's just, and you just look and say, uh-oh, I've done something wrong. And he said you'd use it slowly and gently. And then he tells you when you want to wake up after a long nap, do you prefer to be waking
yes.
up gently or thrown out of bed? And I just thought that was really something. But this man, tell us about Jacques and his lovely wife.
Yes. Well, Jacques, in fact, is my wife's uncle, and I had first met him on a trip to France many years before we had moved here, and I'd met him and his wife, Jeanne, and it was through my wife's family that I think I learned a lot of simple little lessons about French meals and French food. Jeanne is no longer with us. She passed away. And in the book, Corkscrewed, I talk about taking a wine adventure in the Pyrenees with Jacques to some of the places that he had, Jeanne had gone through over the years. And it was really a touching, journey that we took together. But I think Jacques is a typical Frenchman who is, not only opinionated, but has a certain amount of that generation I'm speaking, has a certain amount of savoir-faire when it comes to wine and when it comes to wine and food and appreciating life around the table. In fact, I remember one of my favorite things was when we had gone over to their house many years ago on a Sunday dinner. They were living outside of Paris near Versailles at that time. And I remember he passed the cheese around and he said, "Here, take some cheese." And I took the knife and I cut a little piece of cheese and he goes, "That's not a piece of cheese, that's a supermarket sample." He said, "This is a piece of cheese." And he put his knife into that and came up with a nice big piece. And so I think, as you can tell, my book Corkscrewed is really about people.
Yes,
and,
it is.
I love telling stories, and it's people that are so important to me. And,
I agree with you.
I remember, and before Jacques and I took our journey in the Pyrenees, I remember. This is an interesting story because just a few minutes ago you were talking about how can people develop a palate, et cetera, et cetera. Well, when I arrived at Jacques' house, he took out his map of the area, took out about five bottles, five glasses, and put a glass on each area of where we were going to be visiting and poured a different glass of wine. And that would, you know, to me was, that's so symbolic of what the idea of terroir was about. In other words, this wine from this area by the coast is this way. This one up in the mountainside, hundreds of meters above, is this way. And they were all different. And, I think that's just something that's very important. Different wines, different geographies, going with different foods and different things. And you know, we don't like to eat the same thing every night for dinner. And so I think once you start experimenting with wine, you start not wanting to drink the same wine every time you have wine either.
Robert, I know we are out of time. Robert Camuto is my guest. His wonderful book, Corkscrewed, gives you a journey. It's great to curl up with this book and read about this magnificent country of France, the various people he encounters, the various things he talks about with wine. And Robert, do you have a website quickly? We have about 30 seconds here that people can go to find out.
Yes, my website is www.corkscrewed.info. And I wanted to let you know that I'm going to be coming to the States in February. On February 19th, I'll be in San Francisco at 18 Reasons. On the 21st of February, I'll be in New York at Chamber Street Wines.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
And that's www.corkscrewed.info.
Well, the book is delightful. The people are wonderful. You feel like you're really right there with you, Robert. Corkscrewed by Robert V. Camuto. Go to his website, corkscrewed.info, and you'll find out even more. Robert, thank you so much for being my guest. And may you enjoy many more glasses of wine. As your friend said, a good wine is a wine you find to be good. A great wine is a wine that you remember. Thank you, Robert. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking
a
break.
Thank you, Donna.
We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous. at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Hey, telephone lines are open and you can give me a buzz if you would like to chat. All you need to do is call in. It's toll free for you, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all you need to do, if you're a first-time listener, just call in, give me your first name or initial, and let me give you my mental impressions. And remember, all I need is your first name or initial. I always love to know where you're calling in from, whether it's another part of the world or somewhere in the United States. I don't care. I just like to know. And then after that, I'll tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Now, I do want to say I'm so sorry. I've gotten sidetracked in the past few shows, and I didn't finish up the astrological forecast for those of you under the sign of Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. We did cover Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Libra, Scorpio, Sagittarius, Cancer, Leo, and Virgo. So I thought, oh my goodness, I hadn't gotten to the last three. Now, this is a winter horoscope. This is just sort of an easygoing style of horoscope. So for you that are born under the sign of Capricorn, you know what? You're going to look better than ever. You're seemingly getting younger, not older. You are going to find that diet and exercise, whatever you've put effort into, is going to really show itself this December. People are going to be complimenting you right and left. And in January, you are just going to be going a mile a minute. My gracious, you're going to go into the year 2009 with a sense of planning and enthusiasm. And you're going to say, I'm not going to sweat the small stuff. I'm after the bigger stuff. And that's exactly what you're going to do. You're going to find yourself having a dominion over your space, your mind, and your attitudes. It's really great. Now, in February, you're also going to be very, very much involved with people, family, friends. You are going to find that you really want to make people your center and your focus during the month of February. So if you're in business, just know your communication skills are going to shine. If you have family, you're going to find that your communication with family is really going to do well. For those of you under the sign of Aquarius, the month of December, you are really needing to enjoy what you have right where you are in the moment so that you don't get stressed out over the unnecessary stuff. And don't forget to take your vitamins. You have a tendency to just go in so many different directions, you can burn yourself out. So take care of yourself. Enjoy the holidays. Enjoy the spirit of the season, and it will bring you so much joy if you do. Let's pop into 2009. By golly, you're just going to be ready to relax, interact with people on a social level that maybe you didn't have time to do during December because of so many commitments. Well, in January, you will have that downtime where you'll be able to do it. In February, you've got plans in place. You're going to be willing to stick your neck out for some new risks, and you are determined that you are going to reach for those goals that perhaps have been evading you no matter how hard you worked. Well, you're going to go for them, and you're going to find yourself saying, I am not going to be mediocre. I really am going to go for the best. That's what you are going to be doing in February, those under the sign of Aquarius. And last but not least, Pisces. With, you know, you've got so much going on in career especially. You have got a lot happening to you in December. And just have that attitude of being prepared, that no matter what comes your way, you're going to be prepared to meet and step up to shake hands with opportunity when it shows you its face. Now, in January 2009, you are going to find yourself really wanting to work on your personal image and making sure that you're going to look your very best. You're going to not step out of your house or your apartment or wherever you'll be unless you know you're looking good, because you have that expectation that something magical is going to be stepping into your life and affecting you in a positive way. So listen to those dreams, pay attention, keep that dream log, but also be aware that you are in that climate of change. And in February, this is a great time for those under the sign of Pisces to take on new projects, to get things moving and rolling so that you can really see some results evolve for you. So before spring, Pisces, you're going to find yourself with some new concepts, new ideas, and new happenings, and that is going to be very, very special to you. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. And also note that all I need is your first name or initial, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. And for those of you that are wanting to be fit and fabulous like me in 2009, well, I've gotten to part of my objective because of being involved with Teresa Tapp's T-Tap system. Well, we have three wonderful gift packages worth well over $100 that you, as a listener, have an opportunity to be involved with. And all you need to do is send me an email, donna@delphiinternational.com. Send me an email and put in the subject line, The Donna Sebo Show, DSS-30. DSS-30. I will need your name and your contact information, so after we have the drawing, which will be done the last week of December, where we will be announcing who the winners are, this is what I need so that I can contact you and let you know, and then Teresa will be sending out the packet to you. It's a great, great program to be involved with. This package is going to be having the skin tightening system that I use and also the 15-minute workout. And that 15-minute workout does the trick. I've toned up 25 inches overall since January of this year. And if I can do it, I know that you can do it. But what I like more than anything else is that I don't have a whole bunch of time. I can't spend time in a gym and spend 2 hours a day doing this stuff. So it's something that 15 minutes a day has really done a wonderful job for me. So I just know you'll like it. So don't forget, send me an email, donna@delphiinternational.com. And in the subject line, you put DSS-30 in the box below. Be sure you send me your name and contact phone number so that we can let you know that whether or not you have won. And then this Saturday, my goodness, aren't the days flying by so quickly? I'm going to be doing an appearance for those of you in the Pacific Northwest, in the Western Washington area. I'm going to be appearing at the Dickens Festival in Stadium at the Tacoma location of King's Bookstore. Now, Stadium is in right downtown Tacoma area, but this is absolutely a wonderful event. I've been invited to participate again. I'm looking forward to it. It is magical. You can dress in costume. It's totally oriented towards the family, and I'm going to be at King's Bookstore in downtown Tacoma doing many consultations there from 11 until 4. So I invite you to come along. Now, if you want to get some more information on this, go to dickensfestival.net. That's dickensfestival.net. They'll have all of the details there for you. And come on by King's Bookstore and say hello. I'd love to meet you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, I know if you've been listening to the news, you've been hearing about the cholera outbreak. And I was talking about it with my husband last night because there was quite a bit on the news. And in Africa, it is just so bad. And when they were showing the pictures of the environment in Africa, I thought, oh, my word, this is something I want to see what I can find out about. Because my husband recalled a situation where when he was a young boy in Virginia, there was a cholera outbreak, and it occurred around the Portsmouth area. And he said, I don't know that it ever reached the news media, but he said it came because of fecal matter that had been, you know, kept with the meat. I mean, it's one of those things. They didn't have, as they have today, the real processing of meat. And he said at that time when they were growing up, when he was growing up, that pigs were kept in mud pens. So the mess would be right in there, and they didn't have the processing like they do today. Because I told him, I said, I didn't hear about anything in Virginia. I knew when my mother was growing up that they had a situation where rats ran out, you know, all over the city, and they had a big to-do over that because I can remember being told that when I was a little girl. But I hadn't heard anything about cholera. So I went up, and I got into Wikipedia, and cholera has been around for a long time. And the biggest thing with cholera is sanitation and waste disposal treatment. And it's something that if you're a person that's going to be traveling different parts of the world, it's always a good idea to realize that wherever you travel to, especially if you're going to be going to any Asian countries, anything like that, cleanliness is next to godliness, as the old saying goes, but it's more than that. The cleanliness and keeping your hands, you know, washing your hands, making sure you only drink boiled water, all of this is very important. When we were in St. Petersburg, Russia, in 92, we found out that sewage was going right into the drinking water, and I found out later that had been going on for over 350 years. The Russians have known about it for a long time. I don't know if they've changed it to date, but it was, we were given a warning when we were in St. Petersburg, even though we were at a fabulous hotel there. Whatever you do, do not drink any of the water. And when you're bathing, make sure you keep your eyes closed. Be very careful because there's parasites in the water. I mean, they really gave us quite a list of to-dos and not-to-dos when it came to the water. And that's something we carried our own throughout the entire trip because we weren't sure that what we were going to encounter at that time when we were traveling. So it's important that when you are traveling, if you're going to be outside of the United States, if you are going to be in certain parts, again, of the world where they do not have sanitation like Europe and the United States and Canada do, if you go into Mexico, this is the same thing there. You need to be attentive. It's very important. And I'll give you a tip that a World Health official gave me. He said he never, ever had a problem. I talked to this man after I'd been in Russia. He said he had never, ever had a problem with anything when it came to the water because he carried a small vial of Clorox, chlorine, with him. And he said he had an eyedropper. And he put in a, whenever he'd go to a place and was staying, he'd get a pitcher, and he would fill it with water, and he put 8 drops of Clorox in the water and leave it overnight. And by morning, he said it was totally clear of any parasites or anything else that would be in the water, and you could drink it because the Clorox had evaporated out of it. So anyway, just be a word of wisdom. Just be wise, and remember, a little bit of soap and water goes a long way. And if you have to travel to a place, you have to carry your own, do that. But maybe also you might just want to remember the little tip that this world traveler who went into many places in the world that were unhealthy gave me so that I could stay healthy whenever I traveled. Just passing it along. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to take a break for a moment. When we come back, I'll have a little bit of this. Oh, I've got a wonderful recipe for some white chocolate custards that you want to make up as a gift for a friend. Real easy. When we come back, I'll share that with you. Donna Siebel here. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Okay, have you got that pad of paper and pen handy? This is a white chocolate cluster recipe that is so simple and so easy. And if you're like me, you get so busy and you think, gee, I'd like to do something for someone, but maybe the budget is tight and maybe you've been invited to go to a particular, you know, potluck or whatever where everybody's going to be sharing the expenses. You'd like to bring a little bit of something different, but you don't want to bake up huge volumes of it. You just want a little bit. Well, this is really nice, and it's great for the quick and easy stuff for the holidays. And this one, I will tell you, this recipe that I have here is made with pistachios and golden raisins. But know that the pistachios could be substituted with walnuts or any of your favorite nuts, whatever you might want to do. And your golden raisins, you could put craisins in. You could put dates in if you wanted. It's going to give a different taste and a little bit of a different texture, but the magic will still be with it. So let me give you, it only takes 4 ingredients, and this is how simple it is. You're going to need 8 ounces of white chocolate, and of course you get that at any grocery store. 8 ounces of white chocolate, and you finely chop it up. You're going to need 3/4 cup of shelled pistachio nuts, which comes to about 3 ounces, and you can lightly toast them in the oven. They're better if they're toasted a little bit like that. And then what you want to do is have 1/3 cup of golden raisins, or if you want cran raisins, want to substitute, don't hesitate to experiment with this because nobody's going to be unhappy. They'll probably disappear so fast. And then you need about 1 1/2 tablespoons of candied fennel seeds. And if you can't find them, you can use some other kind of a candy. The fennel seeds, though, the candied fennel seeds gives a little bit of a unique flavor and taste. Now, this is how simple it is. You're just going to line a baking sheet with some wax paper, melt chocolate in a bowl set over a pan of hot water. Now, your bowl should not touch the hot water. Remember, if you use a double boiler, you always want to have a space between the water, and you don't want the water boiling. You use a double boiler, or you can just fill a bowl with the hot water and use another bowl over it and just let the white chocolate melt. Now, you need to stir it frequently until it's real smooth. Take you just a couple of minutes. You remove it from heat and stir in your nuts and raisins, and then you spoon tablespoon-sized mounds of the mixture right onto some wax paper, and then sprinkle the tops with your candied fennel seeds. Yeah, that's how easy it is. That's how easy it is. You refrigerate it until they're firm. It takes about an hour. So and then you could store it in your refrigerator for up to 2 weeks. So you could put this in little containers. And I would say if you're going to have a little container where you put this candy in, put little pieces of wax paper between the candy so it won't stick to itself and won't take off those little pieces. But I guarantee you, they won't last very long. And if you've got kids and you don't want to use the candied fennel seeds because of the taste, then why not just go ahead and use some other sprinkles that the kids would like, and the kids could decorate this. You know, once you do the mixture, then you could just have them put their whatever their favorite sprinkles are on it, and it could be a lot of fun for you and the kids to make. But if you just want to do it for yourself, it's really, really easy, fast, quick, and it's pretty as it can be. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone number is 877-876-5227. And we also have 888-815-9756. So give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Also, I want to let you know that we're going to be talking with Ron Clancy tomorrow. And Ron is a wonderful guy. He's been a guest on my show every holiday season because he has the most awesome production of music and musical favorites. We're going to be playing that during the time we're talking about some of the aspects related to the music, both popular American favorite songs, how they came about, who did what, and also some classics that are just magical when you listen to them. So all of that we'll be sharing with you tomorrow. And then on Friday, we are going to be talking about wonderful, wonderful Christmas traditions that there is a gentleman by the name of Bob that we're going to be discussing with him, how he has been able to find out some wonderful stories. So we're really going to be getting prepared for the wonderful holiday that we love so much. And these next 2 days, tomorrow we have the music, and then on Friday we'll have more of the special stories. If you are going through a bit of a challenge this time of the year and you really want to avoid the bug, because so often when you're out and about, you're shopping, you're in crowded malls, and these are environments where people are stressed, they're busy, they're tired, and you're going to be exposed to a lot of things that maybe normally you wouldn't be exposed to. What you want to do is, remember, keep your hands clean if you can. And one of the things I found that was really a good tip, and that was using baby wipes, having one of those little portable packages. And then if you're in the bathroom or if you're in a public environment, and you know what, I've seen even grocery stores doing this. They are offering them for free to patrons. And that is, you can take them and wipe down stuff that you might be handling, carts or whatever. And it's just to remember, a disinfecting wipe can really make a difference. But be sure that you get your rest. Now, there is a lot of good things that you can take, but remember, the best thing you can do for yourself is have your vitamin C. Don't forget your cod liver oil, your fish oil. Things like that are going to really make a difference. And when you're in public places, just know if you take good care of yourself, you're not likely to be coming down with a lot of stuff. And you can always do your shopping at a time when you're not going to be there, when the crowds are the heaviest. That can help, too. Donald Wright has a poem I wanted to share with you. It's called Evergreens. Their branches dusted white in powdered sugar lace, shimmering in the sun, makes our hearts feel like celebrating winter's on its way. I know the mountains here in the Pacific Northwest, they are getting stuffed with snow. I have some fun information here for you regarding the Neanderthals. Now, I may not have a chance to share a whole bunch with you, but you know what they've discovered? They've discovered that Neanderthals were not a bunch of idiots. That's right. They are not idiots at all. In fact, these were people that were so well cultured and were so skilled that they're having to rewrite history about the Neanderthal. So if anybody ever calls you or says that you've got the brain of a Neanderthal, say thank you, because they don't know what they're talking about. It's quite a good bit of information, so I think I'm going to save it and share it with you another day. And I wanted to say that there are so many points of information that are coming out medically today that you need to really try to keep aware of, and that is the research that they're doing on people, on wellness. And I'm going to be trying to share some of that with you in the next few weeks, and how certain proteins produce certain toxins. And I'm not talking about proteins that you eat. I'm talking about the proteins that are manufactured by the body. So there's just all kinds of things that are evolving, and the research in medicine is moving forward because they're realizing what they are having to deal with is unlike what they thought it was before. The human body is an incredible instrument. Do you know that plants inspire better solar power? That's right. One of our biggest challenges today is trying to find an effective way to store solar power when the sun isn't shining. And there's two MIT chemists that have devised a method of hoarding solar energy that functionally mimics what plants do during photosynthesis. Now, Daniel Nocera says that they've done a lot of work and spent a lot of time on developing a process, and they are finding that they can do what plants do during photosynthesis. Converting solar energy into a chemical form. They're splitting water into oxygen and hydrogen, and it is being incorporated into solars that the plant itself can store as fat. So he and his associates said, all right, we can do the same thing. They're using cobalt, which is a common metal, to create a catalyst that similarly splits water molecules, and they use an electric current. So they think they're going to be able to have a very practical solar energy storage system. Fascinating stuff. This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, we've run out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow, we've got Christmas music. We've got a wonderful way to enter into the holidays with a sense of spirit. And we invite you to join us right here at bbsradio.com. Same time, same place. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.